Hello and welcome to the Corner 3. It is a sort of sunny Friday morning here in Dallas, Texas. And we're posted up, spotted up, talking all things Dallas Mavericks basketball. My name is Bobby Corella. Joining me, back from a week on the conference tournament beat, you're going to have to give us a rundown of what you were up to, the great Austin Ivan.
It's March Madness. It's the best time of the year. So, yeah, I was doing some college hoops all last week, but back with the Mavs, getting ready for the end of this NBA season.
You got more coming up this weekend, or are you done for the season?
I'm done. Back in Dallas for good, staying around here for the rest of the season. So, no more traveling.
Wow. End of an era.
Yeah.
End of an era. For those who don't know, Austin does a bunch of, I mean, I guess it's across a variety of networks, a lot of college basketball reporting.
Yeah. Color analyst, mainly some sideline. But yeah, different conferences. Went all over. So yeah, was in Louisiana this past week.
Wow. Okay. All right. Well, welcome back.
Thank you.
Welcome back. You're here for the playoff push. That's all that matters.
Exactly.
Joining me as he is wont to do, the great Isaac Harris.
Austin, is it hard for you to watch college basketball and not be the one taking shots?
Yeah, I do miss college. It makes me miss college watching it, but like this is truly like my favorite time of year. Like one shining moment when we get to that point, like we have to talk about like that because that's just the best thing ever.
You can just feel it.
Yeah.
In the arena.
Yep. Great memories, my college days. I wish I could go back.
All right, so as people prepare to fill out their brackets, you're the foremost college basketball authority in at least in this room, if not in this country.
We should fill out brackets, but yeah.
That would go really badly for
me. We have to do it.
Yeah, we should. I mean, it's all about, honestly, luck. Brackets are, you could study these teams so much and get like all of them wrong, and then you get one wrong, and it's just domino effect all the way to the Final Four. So
It makes me mad all the time. Every year, I'll fill it out. Do all this research, and then there's somebody, it's inevitable, somebody at work's like, I just like the color blue.
Yes.
And
I like their mascot better.
Yeah.
But I will say, I'm calling it now, Houston's going all the way.
Whoa.
Houston's going to win the men's. Who's going to win the women's?
South Carolina.
They went undefeated, right?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Undefeated. Going all the way.
Iowa hater.
Going to win the rematch against LSU? Got to put up your
That's
dukes for that one.
Yeah, that one will be heated.
Caitlin Clark, averaging 80 points a game.
Close.
Yeah, it's going to be a good tournament. It's going to be a good tournament.
Juju Watkins?
Does Houston have NBA players? Because I know the last few years they've had a bunch of guys drafted.
Yeah, I think like last year they lost like three players that like just from last year's team that are all in the NBA. They have the Big 12 player of the year, Jamal Shedd. And they have a couple other guys that definitely will be like NBA prospects for sure.
All right, shout out Houston.
Yeah.
One of the top 30 or 40 cities in Texas.
I agree with that. Yeah.
Good job. Good job. Cougs.
Yep.
What do they do?
I don't know what they. Yeah. I think it's something.
Oh, no. Turbulence.
Yeah.
All right. Well, So it's time to talk NBA. We're about to fill out our NBA brackets here at some point. The Mavs are trying to join the party. Mavs are trying to crack into the top six, and they kind of had a chance to do so last night. Unfortunately, they come up a little short. Dropping to the OKC Thunder, 126-119. Kyrie Irving led the way, of course. No Luka for the Mavs. Kyrie stepped up 36 points, 12 assists. Big game from him. 23 points for Tim Hardaway Jr. Nice to see him have a sizzling game. Hopefully that's a slump buster. And then Daniel Gafford, how about this? 19 points and 15 boards. End of an era with the field goal made streak, but we'll talk about that a little later. There's kind of a whole lot to talk about this game, but there's also like just two or three really simple points from this game that can kind of sum up the whole deal. So let's try and boil it all down. There's like two main takeaways, Isaac. What's yours from this game?
Yeah, I mean, you play a team like OKC, one of the best teams in the conference, without Luka. You're like, hey, are we going to have a shot at this game? And you look across the board, you watch the game, you're like, man, the recipe's there. Like, I mean, you look at some of the categories in which they outperformed OKC, more points in the paint, more rebounds. More bench points, 41-27. You look at shooting percentages, around the same field goal percentage, around the same three-point percentage. You're like, all right, like there's not this like glaring thing until, bam, it matches the eye test. It's the turnovers. They had 19 turnovers in this game. Not just that, but it's points off turnovers. OKC having 34, points off turnovers in this game. And, when you lose Luka, you lose Josh Green, which is, a huge thing in this game. We don't know how long he's going to be out for. you lose playmaking. So immediately you're asking a little bit more of Dante Exum, Jaden Hardy, and, you know, they combine for what, four turnovers or eight turnovers between, you know, those two guys. So just asking a little bit more of those guys and results in a little bit more turnovers in this game. It's a tough game for Dante in this one, not his best one, but that was the biggest thing. I mean, it was a close game for a lot of the game. It was only a 7-point, you know, win for OKC. So it was there. That's the frustrating part about it. You're like, oh, we could have stole one without Luka against a really good team. But you can't turn the ball over that much.
Austin, going into the game, we knew no Luka.
Yeah.
Then like 5 minutes in the game, we're like, oh my God, Josh Green. Like Josh Green went down in a heap, stepped on Derek Lively's foot. Looked very painful.
Yeah.
Hopefully he's back soon. But he was out for the rest of the game. And then Dante Exum took a tumble and hit his head on the floor. Daniel Gafford fell down, and luckily he was able to come back, but that looked really scary too. It felt like the whole dang team was getting injured.
Yeah, it was like a playoff-like atmosphere. Like, they were both battling. It was a physical game for sure. Not having Luka, you knew that you were going into that game without him. You needed some players to step up, work on your depth. You talked about the bench points. Like, they did have more compared to Oklahoma City, but not having a guy that can handle the ball like Luka, that can collapse defenses, that can get them moving and out of place and create shots for others was really difficult. Josh Green is someone that can do that, and then you didn't have him for the rest of the game. So those turnovers, the 19 turnovers, like most of those were live ball turnovers. They directly correlated to runouts and points on the other end, like you were talking about. So that's the biggest thing, is it's not like they were trying to make a really tough entry pass and it goes out of bounds or whatever. Like they're you know, they're passing it and they're running through, stealing it, going through the passing lane. So that was a difficult thing to see, is those turnovers turned directly into points for Oklahoma City. And that's just part of not having Luka out there, because he is so respected by others, and defenses have to play so differently when he's out on the floor. So and then Josh going down as well, like that's your other guy. Dante's usually been pretty steady for the Mavs as a ball handler, that takes care of the ball, gets it in the right places. Not his best game. So the guards, struggled a little bit taking care of the ball. And those two things that Isaac talked about kind of were the main takeaways from this one.
Yeah, and without Luka, right, like Dante would normally come off the bench, but without Luka, he's in the starting lineup. So then your point guard rotation is down from 3-2.
Yeah.
And it also means whenever Dante goes out of the game, you're only going to have Kyrie. When Kyrie goes out of the game, you're only going to have Dante. So instead of having two guys on the floor at all times, you only got one.
Yeah.
Which means you do need other people to step up. Josh would be the guy that would step up and handle the playmaking duties, right? But he played 4 minutes and 13 seconds. And so it puts a lot of guys in kind of uncomfortable positions. So like the domino effect is it's very apparent, and you're doing it against a top five defense,
right?
Playing at home, coming off a home loss, so they got like something to prove, and you just beat their butts like a month ago, so like they're looking for revenge.
And they're, you know, Mavs defense, you know, they, you know, I forgot who it was post game a few weeks ago said that, you know, once again I forgot the post game, they're like, hey, we can't give up 30 points a quarter. And, you know, you look at this, you know, this game against OKC, they had 30, 33, 32, 30, and 31. And that's just a recipe that's just going to be hard. Like, you have to, I mean, yeah, they put up 119, but OKC putting up 126, you know, in this new phase of the season of officiating and
which we will dive into.
Yeah.
We will dive into.
All of that. I mean, that's just a ton of points. And they need a little bit more from PJ Washington in this game. You know, he's struggling from three right now. And struggling from three in the corner right now, but missing all seven of his threes, 1 of 11 in this game, especially without Luka. You need, you know, that another guy besides Kyrie to kind of step up and score, and he just couldn't get that going.
Yeah, PJ and Dante go a combined 3 for 19. Non-thems went 40 of 65, which is really dang good, but 3 for 19, that's tough. This game came down to kind of like, Austin, what you were saying about points off turnovers, fast breaks, runouts. It wasn't only the points off the turnovers. How about this? The Thunder, they had 8 offensive rebounds and somehow got 23 second chance points off of those 8 offensive rebounds. They got fouled on one of those possessions. Otherwise, they were 7 of 7 on field goal attempts taken on second chances. And it was a lot of like, get the rebound, not go up for the dunk. No, get the rebound, kick out for a three.
Yeah.
And those are like the big backbreakers.
Yeah.
You know, those are the big, big backbreakers. And so, you know, the Mavs end up, despite out offensive rebounding the Thunder out second chance points to the Mavs, which is really tough because, I mean, you're already down 14 in the points off turnover game. Now you're down 2 on the second chance points game. It's like, all right, well, you got to make those points up somewhere, you know, and they just couldn't do it. All that said, I think, especially despite not having Luka and despite not having Josh Green, I thought they played really well enough, really well generally, a lot of mistakes. But I think they played well enough to beat most teams.
Mm-hmm.
It's just to beat that team, you got to be a little better than that.
Jalen Williams is so good.
He's great, dude. He's a great
obviously
player.
SGA gets a lot of, and deservedly so, praise for the OKC. And then Chet. But it's like Jalen Williams is kind of like the third young guy. Mm-hmm. But like for majority of teams out there, he would be the best young guy on their team. And I mean, you can make the argument on this team. He had so many defensive possessions last night, some nasty blocks in transition that were just really hard to do. A Derrick Jones, you know, Jr. dunk they blocked, a Kyrie Irving
chase down block too.
Yeah.
Man, that's like,
I mean, Kyrie was just like laughing, you know, on that one, you know, breakaway and the angle when she blocked him out of bounds, but just a really, really good player. They have such a good, young,
fun core. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, they're a top five defense in the league, top five offense in the league. Only two teams in the league are top five offense and defense, OKC and Boston. So that lets you know like how good OKC is. And that is, I think there's only been 25 teams in the last 26 years or whatever that have been top five in both. We got two of them going right now. And you got to play that team on the road without your best player. Again, this isn't like an excuse thing, but it's like, in that situation, everyone's got to step up.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of guys did have good games, but just a couple guys didn't, and a couple guys just made one too many mistakes with the
ball.
Like
Tim, you want to talk about Tim's shooting?
Yeah, 5 made threes, 5 of 9 from three. Had a couple, you know, rough mid-range misses in the first quarter, but Tim, 23 points, plus 13. He had 9 rebounds. Tim Hardaway Jr. had 9 rebounds?
Let's go.
The heck?
Rodman.
So, yeah, I mean, they had guys step up. I thought Kyrie was great, and I was a little worried about Kyrie going into that game because, you know, I'm sure his percentages have been fine, but his scoring has kind of fallen off the last couple weeks as Luka's really been doing a lot more of the heavy lifting and the bigs have been doing more. And I thought, okay, as the focal point of the Mavs offense, are the Thunder just going to throw everything they have at Kyrie and try and, like, take him out of the game? You know, just double team him, do all this stuff. And they just didn't. They were like, can you beat us? And he almost did.
Yeah.
He was awesome.
No, Kyrie had some finishes in this game at the basket. It's like
lefty, like,
what is going on?
Side How put you... shot. That was so tough.
Him and a fan. There was something weird with a fan. And
yeah, there were two instances of ejections. Now, this is not a segue into the next thing, but there was one officiated related thing that did not get shown on TV. That there were some Mavs fans were a little perplexed about. This was in the second half. Jaden Hardy lost the ball out of bounds. They ruled it Mavs ball. Probably was a foul. Didn't get called. There was a very long delay during which OKC was able to challenge the call. Mark Daigneault was able to call a timeout. It was like a minute after the play happened. The reason that happened is because there was fans being ejected. And then, like, a few minutes later, there was that Kyrie mix-up with another fan.
They're playing chess.
And that fan almost got ejected, too. Yeah. So the reason that – and you could see it. They didn't talk about it in the broadcast, but I know what happens when fans get ejected. And there was a lot of security moving around in the background. And so you just knew that – so there was something going on, and then the broadcasters referenced it later. So
they have, like
– that's why there was a really
baseball signals to some people in the stands, like, hey, now we need more time.
Yeah, you could hear banging on the trash.
Like, hey, do your thing.
Yeah.
Kind of like Jokic is tying the shoe. Thing he's pulled a few times now to where he's tied his shoe to give the coach and staff a few extra seconds to review a replay. And like,
and the Thunder did that very same thing to the Mavs. Real ones will remember in the 2011 conference finals as Dirk is going to the free throw line to try and ice a game or maybe even tie a game. I don't remember the exact situation. It was in game 4.
So you're not a real one if you don't remember.
Well, I forget the score. I know the game.
Austin
and I know
from the top row.
There was under a minute left in this game, and they were big free throws. I just don't remember the score. Okay. My bad. I'm a fake. But the Thunder accidentally spilled a bunch of water on the floor as Dirk is about to go to the free throw line. And
I know somebody else who did that.
I don't. One last thing from the game. Mavs, 26 of 47 on field goal attempts in the paint. How about 47 field goal attempts in the paint, but only make 55% of them? OKC, meanwhile, 21 for 30. So they didn't take a lot of shots around the rim, but when they did, boy, they made almost all of them.
Yeah.
Again, you have to play super duper ultra well to beat these really good teams, and the Mavs just weren't quite good enough. Okay.
Weren't quite good enough.
Don't make fun of me. No, that's a way to wrap up a thing.
I thought you were breaking into song or something.
You always criticize me for not being able to land the boat or whatever.
Land the boat.
Make landfall the boat.
Uh-huh. Turbulence.
Now I'm going to get stuck here. Like, all right.
Just keep going.
So I got a trend and a couple stats to give you all, and then I want to hear your take on it. Ooh. And Austin, I know your perspective on this will be a lot different than mine and Isaac's. Okay?
True.
So there's been a thing going on these last few weeks, and everyone was kind of like, it feels kind of like this is happening, but I'm not really sure if this is happening. And then there's been some stat stuff to back it up that, yeah, this is actually a real thing, despite the powers that be denying it. But we're here to open your eyes. We're here to pull back the wool curtain and tell you the truth. We're a bunch of truth seekers in Studio 41, okay?
Oh, no.
Fouls are down league-wide. There's articles everywhere about it, but the one that I found a lot of this stuff from was in The Ringer. Yesterday, an article written by Zach Krim. So, fouls are down, and he cites this person, Sravan, on Twitter, who says that since January 31st, okay, so that since the end of January, and if you'll remember that last week and a half of January is when all these guys were going off for 60 points. I think there was 5 60-point games in like 10 days or something. Fouls are down 2 calls per game over the last 2 months. Free throws are down significantly, like very significantly. So the number one free throw rate team in the NBA since February 1st, the Orlando Magic, their free throw attempt rate would rank 9th. In games played before January 31st. The Lakers, everyone's favorite free throw attempt team, they ranked 7 in free throw rate before February 1st with a 0.281 free throw rate. They are down to 0.249 since February 1st. So even the Lakers are taking fewer free throws. Mm. And it's kind of this unspoken thing. The league denies issuing a memo about it despite everyone kind of complaining about the All-Star game. Referees have denied there being some sort of re-point of emphasis kind of thing. But everyone sort of knows. And like last night's game was a really good example. Got real physical. There were bodies hitting the floor. There were a lot of no calls. They were letting people defend. It was this way against the Warriors too. The Mavs had 13 blocks. A lot of those could have been a foul call. So let's start with a Hooper turned reporter. Austin, you used to play basketball at a pretty dang high level. Now, I'm assuming, Isaac, from a fan's perspective, we both probably love it. But from a player's perspective, is it good if you know you're going to be able to play, or does it kind of like raise the temperature a little too much?
It can make you frustrated for sure when you feel like you're getting hacked or pushed and pulled from different directions and you're battling inside and you're not getting calls. But knowing it's league-wide, everyone, you feel like it's the same, so it's not like a personal thing where just one player isn't getting the calls. You have to understand that. As a player, I don't mind if you're out defending on the perimeter and you're hand-checking a little bit more or pushing up on one another. But when you're inside and you know there's definitely contact, your body, your hand going down, something like that, that's where you get more frustrated because you feel like you should have got the call. You should have had a chance to go to the free throw line. So it can get you going in a good or bad way, depending on how you take that emotion, because you get a couple that you don't feel like don't go your way. And how do you perform the rest of the game based off that? So as a player, I understand why they would be frustrated and they feel like they deserve to get a couple more calls. But as a fan watching, I love the physicality. Obviously, you don't want it to get out of hand. You don't want anyone to get hurt or to get anywhere where you start getting to that point. So it's a balance between both. But as long as it's consistent across the league, you feel like all the refs are with every team, every player, it's kind of the same. I don't mind either way that they lean.
Do you? Okay, so as an offensive player, it's frustrating.
Yes.
Because it, like, they just like, do you see the, me bleeding right here? How do you not call that? But then as a defender, is it like empowering?
You're like, okay, like I'm going to go do the same. Like I'm going to, you know, maybe pull their jersey a little bit when no one's watching or push them or do whatever. And if you can get away with it, like it, you feel like it evens out. So yeah, offensively is where it gets frustrating, but you take that frustration out on defense and don't play dirty, but kind of play the same way. Like if they're going to do that to me and they're not calling it, then I'm going to go down on defense and do the exact same thing. So yeah, as long as you're able to get away with the same stuff that people are doing to you and they're getting away with, then it is what it is. But you just have to recognize that and go play defense that way if that's the case.
Does it take a while to adjust to that, or can you? Okay.
Yeah.
Because this has been now like a month and a half and we're just now beginning to kind of recognize it.
Yeah.
Which means that the players may or may not already know about it.
Within each game, it takes some time to see like how the refs are going to call the game. So like the first, you know, few minutes of the game, you see if you drive in or how you're defending or if there's, you know, a ticky-tacky foul type thing. But then if it's been a month now or so long like that, like once you get to that point and you realize, okay, this is how every game is going to be, it's going to start to get easier and easier. But when it's something so new and like a different group of refs or whatever, like it takes some adjustment. It takes some time for adjusting.
Well, that could be good for Gafford and Lively in particular. Yeah. Those guys like to get physical, and it feels like Lively gets a lot of ticky-tack foul calls. So maybe you know, maybe the Mavs can reap the benefits a little bit. Isaac, at the Warriors game, we were both kind of like, ooh, this is pretty cool. And then last night, it was not very cool. So where do you stand on this from an observer's perspective?
No, I love it. Give me more of it.
Okay.
I'm all here for this. And, you know, I think you also look at – you know, when playoff basketball gets here, it feels like they naturally kind of lean more towards this in the playoffs. You look at international basketball, you look at some, you know, Olympics coming up, they're going to play more this way. That was a, you know, a talking point of the, I guess it was the World Cup, to where just, you know, how much more physical, you know, international ball is compared to how it's called in the NBA. But yeah, I love it. I mean, I think there's just different things of, you know, there's a difference between driving to the basket and earning a foul and earning free throws compared to, you know, bringing the ball down the floor and your goal is to sell to get a free throw. And that's the, I think that's from a fan observer perspective. That's, and I'm not saying that the Mavericks or Luka have never done this before. You know, this is across the league. That's the part that gets really frustrating. It's, I think for me, the single most frustrating thing up until now, I mean, it was called a few times last night, was, you know, the player who drives like parallel to the basket and they're not even going to the basket. They're kind of even going away from it at times and just like lean into a guy and then just throw it up. And it's like
complete with the,
it's too free.
If you're out of control, then like you don't deserve to get the foul called. Like, you got to be in control and have a legit shot at, you know, being at the basket and being pushed. Yeah.
Yes. And, you know, they adjusted to the, you know, the swipe through going up, you know, it's stuff like that for me gets frustrating. And I'm like, I love more physicality in the game. I think it, you know, I don't think we can probably advocate for more bad blood, but it's more entertaining. You know, a more physical game, more emotions get into the game, more frustration between opponents and all of that, which as a fan, you kind of like, oh, okay. You know, more talking, more jabbing back and forth. So, I mean, I love it. So, but I'm also weird when it comes to like, even like football too. I love football games that are like 9-6 and it's like the strategy. I know it's not the same comparison, but I really like defense. So yeah, I'm all here for it.
Yeah, we're different pages on the football, but I agree with the basketball.
You want like a 52-49 shootout?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm kind of like in the middle. I don't want 13-10.
Yeah.
You know, but I think the perfect game is like 35-31.
You know, I'll take that.
Like you get a couple punts.
Yeah.
We gotta emphasize the importance of special teams here. You know, okay. In Studio 41, we appreciate all three phases.
Yes.
There was a period at the start of the 21-22 season. So that would have been whatever, two seasons ago, the year the Mavs went to the conference finals. The first two or three months of that season, it was kind of explicitly referenced, like that was the year they stopped calling the you're driving, there's a guy behind you, and then you like jump backwards into them and draw a foul. Like that's kind of the Trae Young thing, but a bunch of players
Chris
did
Paul
it.
Or...
Yeah, that was then deemed an offensive foul. They were giving guys less benefit of the doubt in some other situations as well. As there's a, I have a friend just all over me right now. This drink is, it's not even sugary. What's going on here?
You have a friend all over you.
Very sweet. And it was kind of this players were very outspoken about it, specifically stars and specifically point guards, like 6'1", 6'2", 6'3", kind of players who already are kind of facing long odds because everybody's taller than them. Everybody's stronger than them. It's really tough for them to get enough space, you know, to get a shot. And then guys are crowding it and they want these free throws and they're not getting them. So, like, I do feel for them. The NBA kind of went back on that, though, and started calling way more fouls that season, which was kind of a bummer. Like, I think we as fans, there is a fine line because you don't want it to just be brutal 90 style, like 79-73, like what we saw with the Knicks and the Sixers the other day. But also, we lionize the playoff style basketball. Let's slow down the tempo. Let guys play. Let them get their hands a little dirty, you know? And so I would love for that to carry over to the regular season. So I kind of hope that this is the norm.
Can I ask you, like, is there a team that you think benefits from this? Like, because I think about a team, because I think it helps perimeter defenders a little bit more than, you know, I think of a team like Minnesota, and you have McDaniels and Ant on the, you know, on the perimeter. And
I mean, I think,
like,
the Thunder, too. Shea goes for steals. Lou Dort's very physical.
Yeah, and them just having, you have a guy like Rudy underneath, and it just allows Ant and McDaniels to be a little bit more aggressive on the perimeter. And knowing that you have Rudy, but also this kind of like shift and stuff right now, OKC is a good one. Maybe Boston too. I don't know. That's just something I've been thinking about. Like, all right, is there a specific team or a type of team that this would really?
It could allow Luka to use his body more. He always goes for that kind of like hip check thing.
Yeah.
But like, if you can use your body a little bit more as a defender, then like Luka could make good use of that.
One of my favorite Luka plays is the like, open court mid fast break kind of, and him like trying to set a charge but then just like hip checking somebody and it's like his way of like stopping the play, and it's a Luka.
It's at least not a clear path foul, but it's very close. So we'll see how that settles, whether it does or not. You know, the Mavs were a big free throw shooting team earlier in the season. They're less so now, and that could be why. But rest assured, every other team in the league is also shooting way fewer free throws, too.
You said it's calls are down like two a game?
Two total fouls per game. Free throw attempts are down. It's like 3.5 per game. Not per team. So like 1.9 per team or whatever.
Which, like, in the grand scheme of things, I don't feel like that's a ton. Mm-hmm. You know? Like, I feel like that's – it's not a huge jump from, like, down each team five.
Yeah.
You know? So I think – yeah, like, it's physicality maybe, but, like, to think about just two total fouls a game, that's one each, like.
Mm. And it's, like, it's mostly those soft, like, oh, my God,
right,
kind of, like, eye roll,
right,
ticky-tack, this is soccer kind of fouls,
yeah,
you know? Like, don't call those anymore. Everyone would appreciate it if we just stopped calling those.
Yeah.
You know, and that's really what's happening. I don't think they're not, you know, playing rugby out there or anything.
Right.
Okay, so before that Thunder game, the Mavs capped off a four-game win streak by taking down the Warriors. That was a 109-99 final score. Shout-out to the Mavs for making only six threes and still winning the game. But first, I want to talk about the big dudes, all right? Specifically, Daniel Gafford and Derek Lively II. Now, before we talk about them, go to the – click back on Mavs' YouTube channel. There is an interview featuring Daniel Gafford in Studio 41. He was sitting like right there with Devin Harris talking about all sorts of stuff. That is part one. Part two is going to come out very soon. So that's why you got to sub to the Mavs channel, because all sorts of cool things are going to come out on this here platform. Daniel Gafford unfortunately missed his first shot of the Thunder game, but before that had made 33 straight field goal attempts. That is the second most in NBA history, behind 35 set by Isaac Harris's favorite all-time player, Wilt Chamberlain. Not bad. Before that, Gafford and Derek Lively combined for 42 points on 21 shots against the Bulls. What are y'all's thoughts? Mavs are playing big. What's going on? Why are all these giants out here just dominating, Austin?
Hey, he's been consistent. Like, if that's – we've seen what he can do in the past six games now, five of those he started, you absolutely love it. I mean, if you're going to get shots right there around the rim and can go up for a dunk pretty much every single time, like, you gotta have a big man in the game, because, like, what they do with Luka, and a big part of it is Luka. I think we haven't seen the streak from Daniel anywhere else, and I think you have to give credit to Luka because of that. The way that he draws the defenders in, they do the pick and roll, like, that's why he's having so much success. But shooting 93% from the floor in the past six games, averaging over 15 points a game and almost 9 rebounds. So I love the style that they can play when they have him on the floor. I do understand, you know, why sometimes you want to finish a little bit smaller, or what the options are when you have other guys on the court to be able to switch defensively. But his shot blocking ability, the way he finishes around the rim, he's been great the past six games.
Isaac, now with Gafford starting and Lively coming off the bench, do you like that deployment more, or do you think eventually it will switch back to Lively in the starting lineup?
No, I like this way. I mean, I feel like it's been working. So, you know, what Gafford brings, you know, Gafford going up for as many dunks as he does. We were talking about the game the other day, and I just love how much he has it around the basket. He's going for the dunk.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, for the fan observer, it's a lot of fun to see dunks, but it's also efficient too. I mean, and you look at both those guys, they're both top 10, you know, Lively and Gafford, both top 10 in the league. They're 9th and 10th. In dunks, you know, in the NBA right now. And Gafford's just going to continue going up and up on that list, especially the more he plays. You know, I think when you look at – just look at the difference between, you know, what a year makes from last year to this year when it comes to the big man rotation in Dallas. I feel like the size of the roster and the size of the starting five has been something that we've talked about for, I don't know, a couple years now. And now they've kind of slowly evolved to having more and more size. But you look at last year, and you look at, if you want to include Maxi in this, I put Dwight in this, but you look at the, you know, three guys, and this isn't a shot at those guys. It just shows you what an improvement, you know, Dallas is making right now. You know, it's Christian Wood, JaVale McGee, Dwight Powell. Those guys this year have combined to start 9 games. And you look across the board, and obviously Dwight's not playing, you know, as much right now for Dallas. Christian Wood isn't playing as, you know, many minutes for, you know, the Lakers, and obviously JaVale's not playing much in Sacramento. These are the, you know, that was our big man rotation last year. I mean, yeah. These were the
and
guys.
They couldn't even play Maxi because Maxi missed, like,
yeah,
whatever, 70% of the season last
and
year.
Now, you know, you're going from that to where they're at now with Gafford, a top 10, you know, a lottery pick in Derek Lively. Still have Dwight here. You have a healthy Maxi right now. He can give you these, you know, this a stretch five option. It's such a difference. Like, you can't even, like, fully explain what a difference it is of this big man rotation playing with Luka and Kyrie compared to, you know, the options last year.
Yeah, it's a big upgrade. It's a big upgrade. Gafford starting is really interesting because, you know, he is just as much of, like, a vertical threat as Lively. I feel like he's probably a better offensive rebounder, like, pound for pound with Lively. And so whenever you're trotting out the Luka Kyrie, like, let's score a lot of points lineup, maybe you do just want that guy that can gobble up all the misses.
Yeah.
You know? And then I really like Lively's foot speed. He is definitely, he's more agile than Gafford. I like that in concert with Maxi at the four, because it's just more like dynamic stuff going on.
I like him playing with Josh too.
Yeah, it's just a lot of speed. And yeah, Dante, they get out and run a lot of fast breaks. Even Tim can get out and run on the open floor. So, like, it just gives you, like, a different, you know, your starting lineup is very methodical, very defensive minded, very, like, star driven. And then your second unit is, like, just a bunch of freaks that are going to get out there and run, like, 50 miles an hour, you know, and just try and dunk everything in the open floor. So it's, like, two distinctly different looks. So I do kind of like it. Now, obviously, you know, the Mavs closed the game last night in Oklahoma City with Maxi at the five. They had used Maxi as the backup four in the first half, used him predominantly as that backup five at the end of the game last night over Lively. I think Gafford was like -7, Lively was -2, Maxi ended up -8. So really, like, none of those combinations was working super well. Gafford, of course, did have 19 and 15, so he had a huge game. But with Dallas down, like, whatever it was, 5 or 6 points in the closing minutes, they wanted to go with more spacing on the floor, and it didn't work. But they have had success with that spread lineup in other situations. So it's kind of something they just got to figure out. Of course, it looks a lot better whenever Luka's on the floor, which wasn't the case last night. Okay, Isaac, you mentioned it. I mentioned it. Mavs go 6 of 100 against the Warriors from three. They still win the game. Luka, I believe, only had 21 points, if memory serves. When was the last time they won a game when Luka scored under 30 and the Mavs didn't make 10 threes? I would say maybe, like, never. yet they did it against the Warriors. Obviously, no Steph, no Draymond is a big help in that department. But the Mavs won in a way that we didn't necessarily see coming.
Yeah, I mean, if you're to be a really good team in this league, you got to be able to win different ways. And, yeah, if you go into most games and say, hey, Luka's not going to go supernova, you're only going to hit six threes in this game. They finished, what, 22% from three? Really ugly. It was a weird game. I'll just say it was a weird game. But that's the type of stuff. It's like you got to be able to pull games out like that. No Steph, no Draymond. And you got to be able to, you know, beat teams like that. And they did. And, you know, you have a guy like PJ that, you know, PJ was a plus 28 in that game. Still struggled from three. But that's one of the reasons why I love PJ so much is he can just do all these other things that when you have him on the floor, he's really versatile and he's versatile on defense. But to have a game like that, he just impacts winning basketball. So it was a good win because you can win in a different ways. It was kind of an ugly game, or a weird game, but hey, they got the win. So
winning ugly matters though.
Yeah.
Especially if you're trying to win in the playoffs.
Yeah. You got to be able to pull it out somehow. Like you said, being able to win in different ways is so critical. Not being one dimensional. You can have the best 3-point shooters on the team, on your team, and you're gonna have an off night. You know, there's eventually gonna be an off night. So what do you do? How do you respond? How do you adjust in those situations? Like, to show that you have that versatility, that you can make a change, you can go inside, you can do something different, you have someone else that can step up in a different way. You have to have that ability to be dynamic, especially in the playoffs. Defense always travels, but your offense, you never know exactly what's going to be working, what's going to be going, if how fouls are going to be called. There's so many tangible or variables in situations like that. So, yeah, you have to be able to find different ways and players that can do different things to score in big-time games.
It's like the game within the game, right? Like, you have the mode. You have your way you want to play. The Mavs want to make 15 threes.
Right.
What happens if you don't?
Right.
I mean, you know, cannot compete.
Don't press the panic button.
Yeah, like you the other stuff.
Yes.
And they adapted. They had 68 points in the paint in this game, in that Warriors game. I mean, that's
they're able to use their size.
Yeah.
You know, and that's going up against a Warriors team that is like kind of small, but Trayce Jackson-Davis is a really good shot blocker and like is a pretty big dude. Kevon Looney is in there. Like, it's not like they're the Bulls. The Bulls are super small. You know, so the Mavs are able to bully a slightly bigger team. Now, I did tell a lie a few minutes ago. I said the Mavs have never won a game making under 10 threes with Luka scoring under 30 points. They did that in February against the Wizards. Luka had 26, and the Mavs made 9 threes. However,
it's the Wizards.
This season, the Mavs are 2-6 when they make less than 10 threes. And going back to the start of last season, they are 2-9 when they make less than 10 threes in a game. So,
Boom. I would also say that's probably a stat that's similar for most teams across the league. But
Yeah, it's not just a distinctly Mavs thing or a uniquely Mavs thing. But pretty cool trick to be able to pull out whenever you need it. Now, looking a little forward here, a lot of things are unclear between now and Sunday. The Mavs don't play again until Sunday afternoon against the Denver Nuggets. Will Luka play? Who knows? How long will Josh Green be out? Who knows? Daniel Gafford, Dante Exum, they got banged up a little. Who knows? Like, we don't know a lot of stuff about Sunday's game against the Nuggets. We do know that's a big game. Now, on the other side of that, they have some games that hopefully they should win. They go to San Antonio, they play the Jazz, and then they play the Jazz again after like a 4-day break, which is going to be super tight. And then they got maybe the biggest games of the season, a 2-game-in-4-nights showdown at Sacramento against Kati Vyalba's Kings. Okay, this is a big, I cannot emphasize this enough, jumbo next like 10 or 11 days. Mavs are trying to break into this top six. They're trying to catch Sacramento. They're trying to catch Phoenix. They're trying to catch the Pelicans if they can. And yet here they are still kind of on the outside looking in, and you got the Warriors and the Lakers in your rearview mirror. So, Austin. Mavs won 7 straight. They dropped 5 out of 6. They won 4 straight. They just lost to the Thunder. Now, who knows what's going to happen against the Nuggets? Are they good? Are the Mavs bad? Are they struggling? Are they kind of finding their identity? How are you feeling going into this monumental stretch of sports?
Yeah, it's definitely a little bit of a roller coaster ride, you know, but I like roller coasters, so...
I don't.
I'm on board. I'm ready for the ups and downs. Yeah. So, you know, it is what it is. And maybe you have some unexpected turns and loops and twists, but that's what makes it fun.
I don't know.
You're scared of roller coasters.
I think basketball is fun. I'm not a roller coaster guy.
You went just like
a lot of weight there.
Like the little like kid ride, just like the steady. Just
yeah. The scenic stuff where you can like take pictures. I can't handle the G-forces.
Okay.
You know, maybe like one G-force. Just like one tiny
one.
G. Yeah, just one force.
Okay.
Can't do more than that. I went to Disney World in high school, and I did the thing where like it's like simulating being on a rocket ship, and I could barely handle that. I was like, man, this better end soon, and luckily it did.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
That would have been bad for the people around you.
Yeah, in my little pod.
Yeah.
Now, that was basically last night's game against the Thunder, so I hope it gets a little better against the Nuggets on Sunday. Those Kings games, though.
Yeah.
Implications. Mavs are down 2-0 in the series, season series head-to-head with the Kings. You're trying to pass them. I know you and Katya go way back, and y'all are really good friends, but, like, how do the Mavs disappoint her? They need to win these games.
Yeah. You got to rise to the occasion. Step up. Play physical. Play your brand. You don't know who's in and out of the lineup, but show your depth, show that you have the ability to win and score in different ways. So yeah, those will be critical. You want to pull those out. This is the point where you want to start, you know, being more consistent, peaking at the right time and feel like you're like firing on all cylinders. So this is the time to like get everything together and make sure you guys have the same game plan and you guys go in and they do just that and get these wins on the road.
Those games already use some rocket ship jargon. Yeah. Mission critical. Isaac, how are you feeling about this whole thing?
That's a weird stretch, though, because they have 2 games in between both those Kings games, and they're both in Sacramento, so kind of a weird.
It's like you play Utah, and then you get like a week off, then you play Utah, Sacramento back to back, and then you get a week off and play the Kings again.
Yeah.
Very strange.
It's super, super weird. You know, I think it. I've seen some people like kind of refer to this Mavs team as like, you know, Jekyll and Hyde or like, I don't know, you know what I'm like, I actually want to zag a little bit and be like, I feel like they're kind of consistent in the way of they beat the bad teams. They struggle against the good teams. You know, you look at they're 17-24 versus 500 or above teams. You know, when you start comparing that to some other teams there in the West, it's like how many of these other teams in the West have lost 24 games against, you know, 500 above. The only other team in the top 10 is Golden State. They've lost 26 games. There's only a couple of teams that's lost, you know, 20 games. You know, you have OKC, it's lost 14 of those. Denver, Minnesota, 16. Then you have the Clippers and Kings that are, you know, have lost 20. So Dallas at 17-24 in those games. Now, swing the other way, they're beating the bad teams. They're 21-5, which is really good. So,
the last time they lost to a sub-500 team, by the way, was Memphis on January 9th. So it's been more than 2 months since they've lost to a losing team.
So if you look at the consistencies, they're like, all right, well, they beat bad teams. They kind of struggle against above-500 teams. Luke is an MVP candidate. He's putting up these insane numbers, and their defense has struggled this year. You get a little bit of consistency, and like, all right, well, we kind of know a little bit of who these guys are.
Yeah.
You hope some of that changes come playoff time. You need that to change. But what benefits that is, we've talked about the schedule for the rest of the year so much. There's a lot of games. I say a lot. How many games we have left? Like 15, 16?
Don't ask me.
but, you know, how many of those games are against under 500 teams? There's a decent amount of them in there. So
yeah, so going into last night's game, exactly, the Mavs had 16 games left. Half of them were against winning teams. Half of them were against losing teams. And 2 of the Mavs' toughest 3 games of the season by opponent's win percentage were the Thunder and their next game, the Nuggets.
Mm.
So after that, it's 8 losing teams, 6 winning teams.
So that's what it puts such a big emphasis on this Kings game, or these Kings, you know, games, you know, coming up next week. But also, I mean, this is, you got to stay true to who you are right now, these final few weeks of beating the under 500 teams. It's going to be a backbreaker if you go into this and you lose, you know, 2, 3, 4 games against some teams that are really struggling right now, and the fans might riot.
Yeah, you can't afford that.
No, not at all.
Cannot afford that.
Yeah, because you have to win, like, basically, you have 8 games against the sub-500 teams. You have to win almost all of them, and you have to at least hold serve in those Kings and Warriors games.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you have to go 2-2 in those or something, you know.
Yeah, like, you look at the Rockets. I think they have the Rockets twice at the end of this year. Like, those games just scare me. The Rockets are just, like, some fiery young guys, and it's like you just can't – you got to be ready for all of these games right now.
Yeah, it's tough. What is Isaac, let's start with you. What is one thing, whether it's a player or a team stat or an idea or a feeling or whatever, what is like one thing that can realistically change, realistically improve between now and the end of the season that could be the difference maker between the Mavs making or not making the top six?
PJ Washington's outside shot. I did a little essay about him this past week that Chopper did a great job editing, and you know, he's really struggling since coming to Dallas, shooting the outside shot, the corner three, obviously struggling in that. Let's go, company man. And, you know, that's what can improve so much, because he's locked into playing at least 30 minutes a night, 34, 35 minutes. He's going to play with Luka and Kyrie. He's going to get open three-pointers, especially in the corner. You got to be able to hit him. And he was, like, 1 of 14 the last 2 games, I think, something like that. So I think, but you look back at some of his past seasons, he hasn't been in the season, you know, been in the league too long. He's had seasons shooting 36, 37, 38% from three. So can he get back to some of those numbers? If he does that, then I think Dallas could keep moving forward.
Yeah, you'd love to see him catch fire.
Yeah.
Along with a couple other guys. But I think I'll touch on what we started with. The turnovers, like, that is something you know you can control. So just staying consistent of taking care of the ball, valuing it, because you're getting more. If you take care of the ball, you're having more opportunities to shoot. Even if you're not shooting it at as high a percentage, you're getting more chances and looks. So that's just something that, especially in big time games where down the stretch, like, every possession just means so much. Like, that can win you or lose you a game, is like having a couple more possessions. So taking care of the ball. And then on the flip side, trying to create some turnovers and get some runouts of your own and scoring that way.
Control what you can control.
Yeah.
An important thing to keep in mind psychologically and emotionally in a playoff chase. The Mavs can't control what the Kings do or what the Lakers or Warriors do or what the Suns do or what the Pelicans do or anything, what the refs do, but they can control what the Mavs do.
Yep.
You know? So you just got to do that. Just got to do that. Don't give the ball away. Hey, make some shots. It's simple.
Yeah.
We made the top six.
There we go.
We did it.
We figured it out.
Yeah. Well, we hope that you enjoyed this program wherever you are in the great wide world. For Austin and Isaac, hey, for Cat and Chopper in the back, this has been the Corner 3, and we will be back with you next week following 3 high-pressure, high-stakes basketball games, getting you ready for that Kings series. Boy, this is it. This is why we play basketball, for these moments right here, for this playoff push. It's super exciting, and we hope you enjoy every step of the way. Have a great weekend. Have a great day, whatever. I'm setting the plan. I'm saying goodbye to everybody. You are now, you're bogging. All right? You bog.
The boat.
I'm Bobby.
The boat.
Land ho. Drop the anchor. We're home. We'll see you later.